It has been a long week. We've talked about why Augusta was named one of the unhealthiest cities in the nation, and we looked at the adverse side effects of black beauty products. So as we do every Friday, we have gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, relax, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for The Break Room.
What happens when the last petal falls?
The Mastel remains a beast forever.
And we become antiques.
You have this guy, Lindsey Graham, a total lightweight. Here's a guy in the private sector. He couldn't get a job, believe me.
My apologies. Sorry.
Peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly.
Joining us in the break room, Natalie Pavelski is Vice President for Cater Communications. Kalina Baller is co-host of the Real Snobs podcast. Greg Williams, mortgage banker and host of the radio show Greg's List. And Stefan Turkheimer, lawyer and editor for Georgia Poll. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
I'm excited to be here.
You are.
Oh, my God. I can't even tell you.
Well,
I mean, part of that's the fact that it's Friday, but most of it is you.
I think it's because they promised green beer, and I don't see any.
No.
It was going to be green dry station.
Oh, it's going to be green coffee, my bad.
Right. Hopefully your coffee is not green. If so, do not drink it.
So in a coffee room.
A beloved Disney classic makes another comeback.
Tell us all this time.
Have you really read every one of these books?
Some of them are in Greek.
True as it can be.
That is a clip from the new Beauty and the Beast, starring Emma Watson. The film has stirred up some controversy. There's a short scene in the movie that shows two men kissing. The Malaysian government demanded that Disney cut that scene for the version that runs in their country. Disney denied that request, so the film will not play in Malaysia. And the question here is, should nations have some control over possibly offensive or objectionable content in movies? Should this lie only with the film studio, or should countries have a little bit of say-so?
I mean, okay, I'll go. Look. We're acting as if in the United States we don't have any control over the movies, but the reality is we pre-screen these things, we assign ratings, we say people that are under 17 can't go to certain things, people that are under 13 can't go to others. So I think it's a little hypocritical to tell Malaysia that they can't sort of run a rule over our movies. That said, if you're going to object to part of Beauty and the Beast, why isn't it the sex with a buffalo part? I mean, I'm not.
That is something to think about.
The bestiality plot line should be.
It's in the name.
Heavily.
I mean,
come on. I was actually looking forward to taking my 4-year-old.
And
to this
we can have different opinions on bestiality. It's okay. Well,
it works because he eventually turns into a human.
Yeah. Well, as I pointed out in the responses, here's the thing. I mean, anytime any entity tries to do censorship, it reminds me of Prohibition, the failed experiment here. You cannot censor everything, and the internet has made it almost impossible. So Malaysians that really want to see it, and by now they're going to be bi-curious, if you will, they're definitely going to want to see this deleted scene.
Did you just call all the people of Malaysia bi-curious?
I meant it as a pun.
Oh, I see. That pun went over my head.
I don't know what's happening. This is nothing new. We know that different countries, you know, refuse to show, certain movies at certain times.
They want control over their culture. Yeah.
Right. And I don't see why, this is even a controversy at this point. We know that there's some countries that are going to, not show things or whatever. And like you said, Greg, if they want to see it, they'll find a way.
That's what I'm saying. It's a joke. They'll find a way. Bi-curious. They're curious about the gay scene. Well, never mind.
Whatever it might be. If they ban something for, a woman wearing a skirt above her knee,
a woman
whatever
showing
it might
an
be.
Ankle. I mean, they're
right. So I mean,
having sex with
a
horse,
or having sex with a horse
right.
that eventually turns
honestly,
human.
I would like to move on because
that's a good idea.
This is
my parents
really
are
not going anywhere good. Okay, Pope Francis wants to consider allowing married men to become priests. Typically, in the Roman Catholic Church, as most of us know, celibacy is an absolute requirement, nor if you're going to become ordained. The Pope's reasoning for this is he wants to build a crew of clergy in rural areas where there is currently a shortage of priests. So, good idea?
As a recovering Catholic, I say it is about time. We've got a serious priest shortage in this country. The very first Pope, Peter, was married. They used to have married priests, and then some Pope decided that he could hack celibacy, and we went down that route. The only thing I'd say is while Pope Francis is at it, he needs to also end the sexism of a male-only priesthood, join the 21st century, and ordain women.
That's where I am. You know what I mean? I'm not a Catholic at all by any means. I have a few Catholic friends. And from what I understand, when they told me about this particular thing, how men are only priests, I said, this makes no sense to me. But then when I think about it, I was raised Christian. And in a lot of churches, Christian denominations, they discourage women from getting into the pulpit, even though they're completely ready. So I think that this is a completely backwards way of looking at monotheistic religions in today's age.
Somebody at a church I went to with my grandparents said, you can't have women as in the pulpit because he has to suffer through hearing them enough at home.
I think it's a great idea. It modernizes the church, and you know, these the priests are looked at as advice givers, I guess, and the more real world experience they can have, if they're giving advice and taking confessionals, if they don't actually go through the experience themselves, I think it weakens their credibility.
I think that's exactly right. You know, I got married in the Methodist church, and so our premarital counseling was with a minister who was actually married and actually knew something about the institution.
Well, imagine what would happen if a married woman became a priest who also has real world experience.
There's one thing y'all are missing here, which is that the whole idea, the whole contract here, is that a married priest will have a relationship other than the one to his
God.
To his congregation and to God. And so you're essentially having a slight splitting conflict of interest there. Yeah. That's
but
the
no,
idea.
It's also a strength. It also means that you have a family on whom you can draw when you need it.
All right, let's move on to our next one. How badly does everybody here want to see Hamilton?
Oceans rise, empires fall. We have seen each other through it all. And when push comes to shove, I will send a fully armed battalion to remind you of my love. Da, 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 da.
If you have a disability, you might object to that show or any other Broadway show. In fact, a blind theater goer is suing the producers of Hamilton, saying they did not accommodate his impairment. He wants a headset with audio describing what he cannot see on stage. Now, Broadway has done a number of things to try to make its productions more accessible, but have they done enough? Should live theater be more accessible?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great idea. I think the private sector or a ancillary group could easily develop some kind of app for it to replace it in the meantime, because we're not going to have plays written in Braille anytime soon.
All right.
Right.
Like the complainants in this story, I haven't seen Hamilton. But.
Oh, God.
Is that too soon for this? Whatever. I'm continuing.
Yes, please do.
But there are actually a lot of plays that are already doing this. They have like a person that essentially voices the action on the stage and all that stuff. I think that is something that should occur.
Yeah.
I don't know that they necessarily need the mandate, and essentially when you sue someone, that's what you're asking a court to do. But at the same time, I do think this is something whose time has come.
Yeah, I mean, as much money as they're paying for these tickets, I mean, they better offer something for everybody, you know?
Well, it's a musical, really, but again, I think that, you know, wherever necessity is the mother of all inventions, correct? So, you know, what if entrepreneur came up with some kind of app that was able to take care of this problem instead of having to go through a government mandate. That would be my argument.
And the other option is you could just read my Facebook feed, because half the time it's just things about Hamilton.
Yes, it's constantly Hamilton.
That's right.
Yes. I should mention that Sam Burnham has gone onto Twitter and said, putting Stephen Turkheimer and Greg Williams on the air together, oh boy. And you're right, Sam, as we've seen already.
This is actually a sequel. Me and Stefan were on about a month ago. So this is the sequel to that great story. This is like Empire Strikes Back. It's going to be better than the first.
Natalie, did you want to say something about Hamilton?
You know, to the extent this can be done, why not do it? It sounds like you can add it to the already computerized light and sound cues for not a whole lot of money. And if you're making as much money as the producers of Hamilton, you know, let's accommodate everybody.
It is Friday. We are hanging out in the break room. As you know, you can always weigh in with your opinion as well. Call us at 404-500-9457 or tweet us. Coming up, we'll talk about the right way to make a PB&J. Plus, Snoop Dogg has a controversial new music video out. Go figure. That's next from On Second Thought.
Of the sea. back to the block. Snoop Doggy Dog Funky get the doc. Went solo on that ass, but it's still the same. Long Beach is the spot where I serve my cane. Follow me, but you bet not slip, cause 9 Trez ain't the years there for me to quiz out my grip. So I ain't holding nothing.
I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. We are having coffee and conversation in the break room. My guest today, Natalie Pavelski of Cater Communications, Stefan Turkheimer of Georgia Poll, Kalina Bowler of the Real Snobs podcast, and Greg Williams of the radio show Greg's List. And we want to say thank you to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that we drink. It is delicious. They're online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay, last month something very troubling happened in Dahlonega, Georgia. In the main square, a large sign on a building went up that read Historic Ku Klux Klan Meeting Hall. After a lot of protest, the sign was taken down, but a number of local residents actually objected to the removal of the sign. They said that was a violation of free speech. So, two questions. A, is it? Should the sign have stayed up? And B, would you be shocked to see something like that go up in your own town?
If a sign like that went up in Midtown Atlanta, oh yeah, I'd be shocked. And let's hope we never allow ourselves to stop being shocked by signs like that. Hateful displays like that in this day and age?
Yeah.
And, you know, the unfortunate thing is signs like that have gone up in Midtown, and I've actually seen them within the last year, and it's really, really sad. I remember seeing flyers go up all around Cabbage Town, for instance, one time, and the neighbors were, of course, you know, outraged, and they were like, what is going on? And of course they were taken down. Yeah, free speech is great. You know, you actually absolutely have the right to, you know, say what you mean, but you cannot tell and you cannot say what the reaction will be. So of course this reaction seems right in line with what happened, but I'm not shocked about it. Of course, if something like that would go up.
I was about to say, nothing shocks me anymore. So,
well, wait a minute. Isn't there a danger though? If we stop being shocked about things like this, we're normalizing.
Well, we're being desensitized to it. So things like this, unfortunately occur so often, and we have so much, daily interaction with social media where we just glance through, we can scroll through something on Twitter where all the mean people live or Facebook or anything, and you just see things that are just so outlandish that it really has desensitized me personally. So I don't get shocked by it. Now, are there consequences for your free speech that doesn't jive with mainstream American thought? Absolutely. It's one of those things where somebody that works for a corporation, if they post a racist rant on Twitter and they get fired for it, of course they had the right to say it. The company also had the right to fire them for embarrassing the company.
But did the public have a right to demand the removal of a sign?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, the public outcry has made a lot of things better in society. It's always the public. These boycotts have had some effect from both conservatives and liberals, and that's really a public outcry, isn't it?
Stefan, you're the lawyer here.
I know. That is absolutely true. The First Amendment does protect speech, and obviously you can't have a signed ordinance that says, okay, no hateful speech, but just cool speech. That's not something that's going to work. But you're right. I mean, basically the public fought back on this and had it removed, and there's a lot of complicated stuff going on there. But what the magic of it is that there are people that are so fired up about this that they're willing to go outside and protest, both for and against, and that we can have these kind of public debates because we're in a society that allows it. So, I mean, the same society that allows the free speech of the KKK sign allows the protest against it. And that's those forces, countervailing forces, will decide what the society is.
Right. Agree 100%.
If you want to weigh in on this, tell us if you think the sign should have stayed up and whether you'd be shocked. You know how to reach us. Tweet us at OST Talk. Sam Burnham again says, weighs in again. He says there needs to be a balance between free speech and propriety, which sounds like you guys all agree with. Okay, so let's test that a little further. Rapper Snoop Dogg is at the center of controversy yet again. This time he's under fire for his new music video. In it, he stages a mock assassination of a clown that looks like Donald Trump. Here's a clip. Okay, that is from the song Lavender. Not much clues there as to what's going on, but in fact, he shoots this little gun at a fictional Trump and a little cartoon bang sign flops out of the front of the gun. Trump, not happy with that, he tweeted, quote, "Can you imagine what the outcry would be if Snoop Dogg, failing career and all, had aimed and fired the gun at President Obama? Jail time," end quote. Even to Florida, Senator Marco Rubio called the video dangerous. You're shaking your head already, Natalie.
Yeah. Yeah, because President Obama would not have even deigned to respond to a silly video like this. Look, this is 4.5 minutes of my life I'm never going to get back. It's full of,
of watching the video.
Yeah. It's 4-syllable words. It's 4-letter words. It's the N-word. It's
Snoop.
Sloppy.
It's Snoop.
Snoop. Right. Yeah. But the thing is, he points this flag gun at somebody who's supposed to be sort of a Trump stand-in. This is protected artistic speech. It is protected political speech. And I really wish, you know, the president wouldn't waste his time on it. And secondly, if he's going to waste his time on it, there are other amendments than the Second Amendment. We have a First Amendment. Nobody gets thrown in jail for this kind of thing.
Right. Well, and it's like a shooting in effigy, if you will, right? I mean, I've seen conservatives say, well, if the, you know, this had been done against Obama, imagine the outrage. And I haven't seen it. I didn't realize it was such a kind of a
effigies like that have been put up against Obama.
Such a childish.
On several occasions.
And such a childish type video. And I had just been talking about how wonderful Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre's album was back in the early 90s. So
yeah.
Well, I may have to remove that from the record.
What's amazing is that Snoop shoots a clown and everyone already realizes it's Trump. Like, surprising to anyone.
It was the hair. Come on.
I will take issue with Marco Rubio's statement. I think he was trying to compare the video in a positive sense to Michael Jackson's Dangerous video.
Oh,
I think that's what
come
he's attempting
on.
To do. Its context is important here.
Hilarious.
I mean, look. Everyone else sort of gets upset when Donald Trump wastes his time complaining about Snoop, but I'm thrilled that's how he's using his time. Look at how he spends the rest of his time when he's concentrating on his job. I would hope that Donald Trump spends the next... until impeachment or the next remainder of the 4 years, just commenting on music videos. I think we'd all be happier if that's what he did.
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Wouldn't it be great?
That's why we were happy when Obama was playing golf. That meant he wasn't taking away liberties for 8 years.
We can all agree.
Okay, here we go.
All right, so here is one that is way less controversial than any of that. March 31st is Peanut Butter and Jelly Day. Okay, this is really serious business in Georgia, as we know. We are Peanut Central. We are Goober Pea Heaven. This is the Peanut State.
Yes.
That was nice.
So.
What'd you call me?
Here's the question. Is there a right way to make a PB&J? Have you ever had a bad PB&J?
No.
Yes.
You can't have too much jelly on it, I guess. Is that possible?
Oh, my God. Kalina is like shocked to her core.
The ratio is important.
The jelly to peanut butter ratio, it has to have more peanut butter than jelly. That's
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's like, I don't know if you've ever fed a dog peanut butter. But basically, if you have too much
I'm really
peanut
not
butter,
into that stuff.
Well,
but,
I mean.
Oh my that's how God. You give them their pills.
This is a morning show.
I know.
This is a morning show.
We start with Beauty and the Beast. So.
All right. Let's dial it back.
No, sorry. My mistake.
To PG-13.
No, I agree. The ratio is keenly important here. And also is the bread. And then we can get into how it's made. A fried PB&J, grilled PB&Js are fantastic.
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 I'm glad you mentioned bread. Because I think people forget that you need to have the right kind of bread for PB&J.
And so what's the right kind?
Gluten-free wheat bread is not the right bread.
You're correct in that. It needs to be, you know, the white bread in the long, you know, yellow bag
colonial
with the girl on
like
it.
Colonial.
Right. Yeah, it needs to be that sort of bread.
Wonder
very
bread.
Soft, very fluffy. And it needs to be soft yet dry. Sometimes when I would get my PB&Js in my lunchbox, the condensation would get in there,
somebody's getting fired for that.
And I'm triggered. I hate that word, but I'm triggered right now. I feel bad. I don't like this.
Natalie? Well, I think there's one wrong way to make a PB&J, and we can all agree on this, and that is if you put down the bread and put the jelly on first. Because then if you put the peanut butter down,
Wait a second. Hold on. Now I'm confused. You don't put the peanut butter on one of the slices and
that's
the jelly on the other and
that's
then smack them together?
That's another acceptable technique, if you're really into the fillings, is to put peanut butter on both sides and jelly on both sides.
Oh.
But then it's like a double-decker.
And then it's a double-decker
PB&J.
That's
like a double meat sandwich at
Subway. You have blown Stefan Turkheimer's mind.
I don't even know what utensils you use for that. That's amazing.
And I like after all that, we have recipes to fry said sandwich. Mm-hmm. I mean, we fry Twinkies.
Well, I like
fried
a
grilled
Oreos PB&J.
Here. I mean, we
grilled
fry
PB&J is no joke.
Fried green tomatoes.
Are you serious?
So vegetables unhealthy in the South. That's
you can also make, well, number one, I come from California, so I use whole wheat sprouted bread for my PB&J. Sorry.
God bless you.
Fail. Sorry.
Hashtag fail.
And her peanut butter is actually tahini.
No.
Almond butter.
But when I make grilled
PB&Js, responsibly raised peanuts.
I put only peanut butter on the sandwich. I grill it like a grilled cheese, and then I dip it in the jam.
Oh, my God.
How highfalutin
is
that?
Okay, you've blown my mind.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Try it.
Try on some Grey Poupon.
Okay. You've if got you are just sandwich. Joining us, we want to hear your PB&J recipes. We are hanging out in the break room and with Natalie Pavelski, Greg Williams, Stefan Turkheimer, and Kalina Baller. Okay, let's talk about animals. When it comes to coyotes, you either love them or hate them, right? That debate is currently playing out in Georgia. Our state wildlife service is encouraging hunters to kill coyotes in and around Atlanta. The Georgia Department of Natural Resources says, quote, coyote predation is scientifically shown to negatively impact wildlife populations, kill livestock, kill domestic pets, and contribute to undesired human-coyote interactions, end quote. Many wildlife and animal activists say it's inhumane and possibly dangerous if it's too close to homes. So what do you think? Open season against coyotes?
Well,
yeah,
I definitely prefer cougars at Johnny's Hideaway to coyotes. But
I'm sick. It's a wrap, guys. Thank you for having me on.
As I pointed out, coyotes are dangerous to pets and children and actually humans. So I do think that the coyote awareness campaign is a good one, although everybody that has a gun is not actually adept at shooting guns. So I do see the danger in suburban people that shoot their gun once every 6 months that are now going to go shoot Wile E. Coyote in the backyard.
And it's not even suburbia. In Atlanta, you know, in Midtown, we have two coyotes in the neighborhoods.
Oh my gosh.
And in Piedmont Park. So I'm picturing Elver Fudd in Piedmont Park. Okay. Now, it's different in rural Georgia. I get that. But in urban areas, this is a problem.
But there needs to be a population control. Absolutely. We kill millions of bugs every year. Pest control is huge. So I think of this as an extension of pest control in
my home.
The
thing with it is, according to Georgia law, if you take a coyote out of Piedmont Park, you have to put it down. You're not allowed to relocate it.
Mm. So or adopt it.
And Beauty and the Beast, we're coming back.
Let me inject a little bit of fact in here, which is that almost no humans are attacked by coyotes ever.
But
and
apparently, a lot of coyotes.
We have guns.
But apparently, a lot of coyotes are attacked by humans.
Yes.
Ah.
And they're almost, coyote attacks are extremely rare, and when they occur, they're almost never serious.
Well, I use guns on spiders and also coyotes.
I'm just going to say the same thing about ants, spiders, and cockroaches, you know.
Yeah.
Like, people are rarely attacked by them, but we spend millions of dollars
controlling
them.
It's a war on insects.
Them.
All right, okay, this is a terrible idea. No one can tell the difference between a coyote and a dog at night. They're going to shoot a bunch of people's animals, maybe some kids.
Yeah, you're
it's
right
a bad
about
idea.
Okay, let's move on to something more adorable. Everybody probably has already seen that video that went viral last week.
Shifting sands in the region, do you think relations with the North may change?
I would be surprised if they do. Pardon me. My apologies.
Okay. That is Robert Kelly, an expert on Korea, doing an interview with the BBC. It was live from his home office via Skype, and as most of us know, is very young and totally adorable kids burst through the door with a lot of swagger, quickly followed by their anxious mother trying to drag them out of the room. All right, we can all laugh, but there actually are a ton of parents out there who work from home. So the question is, how do you stop this from happening? What's your strategies to prevent kids and pets?
Oh, you can try, but nothing is 100%. I have had my daughter join vocally in conference calls in my home office. I even had our basset hound join in a call to the British embassy up in Washington.
Nice.
Yeah, we're talking to the embassy and you hear this. Oh.
Nice.
That's how they view all Americans. They all think we like live with the livestock and whatever. They probably were just like normal Americans. I don't know why they have that accent.
Shooting our coyotes on a Monday morning.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I live in a loft, so this is even harder for me because I don't have doors or walls. So I just keep moving constantly and try and stay ahead of whatever beasts are in my house. I don't have children, but the dog is faster than the children anyway, so it's not really that helpful.
Yeah, I have a dog as well. And even though I have yet to do a video conference for something like this, I do a lot of Skype calls, so I just keep my finger on the mute button constantly, just in case I need to quickly, you know, hit that button.
Well, I have two dogs, and they tend to love barking when I do get on the phone, because apparently I'm not paying them attention, and, you know, when you're taking a mortgage application or trying to have a serious conversation, they're like, what's that noise? I was like, I don't know, it's a coyote or something. But so
the consensus problem is dogs and coyotes.
Right. The children, though, that video is awesome when the toddler, that, well, the one that was still in the stroller, just burst in, just kind of like it had been like rolling downhill.
The baby
walker. Yeah, that was awesome. Like,
that
how did
was
they
so
get?
Great.
How did she get the momentum to just burst in the room?
Yeah, those kids are. I think we can goes without saying are awesome. Okay, all right. One last thing, and we have just a few minutes to talk about it. But yet again, Donald Trump and South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham are feuding. This time, Graham wants information about Trump's possible connections to Russia.
I've seen no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, but the longer it takes to answer my letter, the more concerned and suspicious I'm beginning to be.
Graham is also concerned about the truth behind Trump's claim that President Obama wiretapped his phone. But answers to those questions will come, if they do, at federal expense. So the question is, do we support the use of taxpayer money to investigate these things?
Sure. I mean, as George W. Bush said, quote, we need all the answers concerning possible Russian efforts to intervene in the 2016 presidential election. I think we need to know what happened here. And if it takes taxpayer money to figure it out, I'm all for it.
We should absolutely use taxpayer resources to investigate the president. President Obama has a track record that needs to be researched.
No, the minute that we let insane, unhinged tweets decide what congressional what congressional investigations happen is a sad
moment. Well, normally
I
was not a big fan of Lindsey Graham. I mean, when he was running for president, Skim Milk was doing better in the poll numbers than him.
Oh,
but he got us into, after the inauguration in D.C., he snuck us in to watch the confirmation of General Mattis. And I can't say anything negative about Lindsey Graham anymore.
And this is a bipartisan effort, too. He's teaming up with the head Democrat on his subcommittee to do this.
It's true. And I think this is absolutely what they need to be doing. And taxpayer money is clearly the correct way. In fact, when I wrote my check to the IRS recently, I actually put on the memo line. For Lindsey Graham.
I don't mind my own taxpayer dollars going. I know there's going to be a lot of people to say, oh, I don't want my taxpayers going. I get it, but I absolutely want this investigated.
Mine went to Rand Paul. So
there you go.
Well, all right. We are out of time in the break room. I want to say thank you to all my guests. Greg Williams, mortgage banker, host of the conservative radio show Greg's List. Natalie Pavelski is vice president for Cato Communications. Stefan Turkheimer is a lawyer and editor for Georgia Poll. And Kalina Baller, co-host of the Real Snobs podcast. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And hi to my parents in East Cobb. Thank y'all for listening.
Thank you for giving me a heart attack several times this morning as I, you know, feared for an appearance by the FCC. But
you're welcome.
But I want to welcome, as always, comments from our listeners. We have a ton of tweets about things we were discussing today. Bring them on. We want to hear them. You can find us at OST Talk on Twitter or call 404-500-9457. I am on Twitter at Celeste Headley.